The wind blows the children with a great thrust and a sharp shattering. They are shoved through darkness, silence, and then nothingness. Their bodies dissolve beneath them. Meg feels herself being flattened under tremendous pressure as if she were under a tremendous steamroller. She is dying for want of air as she literally travels through time and space. Meg is tethering in the fifth dimension in order to save her father and the Earth from the dark forces of the Thing. Now, unlike Captain America and the Black Panther who have a blue Infinity Stone, or the Avengers who find a wormhole, or even Harry Potter who can apparate, Madeline Lingle's characters travel across the universe interdimensionally. By using tesseracts, the children are able to cover tens of light years of distance instantly. A tesseract is a fifth-dimensional bridge between two points in time and space. It is explained this way. An ant can walk from one end of the piece of the string to the other by walking all along the surface of the string. But if you wrinkle the string and you make the distance shorter, you can get from one end to the other quicker. So tethering is the ability to use your mind to fold the fabric of space in order to form a bridge to a faraway place. It's what Albert Einstein suggested in his theory of general relativity. It's called the Einstein-Rosen bridge. And just attempting to explain it has me feeling an awful lot like the main character, Meg Murray, when she tells her brother, "I see, I've got it. Well, just for a moment, I got it. I can't possibly explain it now." This baffling understanding of mystery is closely related to what the disciples are experiencing in the stories about the ascension. Luke ends his gospel. Then he begins the Acts of the Apostles with the story of how Jesus takes his leave of absence. Technically, it's known as the Ascension. Jesus leads the disciples to Olivet, a mount just outside of Jerusalem. He speaks with them for a little while, and then he is lifted up, disappears into a cloud with only promises that he will return someday. The disciples stand there. And with them, I wonder, to what dimension is Jesus going? How can we follow? How will he return to us? What will we do until he returns? Luke reports it all so matter-of-factly, we hear it like a newscast. We accept this dramatic exit just as one more fantastic miracle, like the feeding of the 5,000s, or when Lazarus was raised from the dead, or the homeless brought to a demoniac. But this odd response of the disciples lets us know what a moment of true wonder it is. They stand still, simply staring at the sky. Then they are joined with two men dressed in white, just like the women who went to the tomb, and they ask almost the same question, "Why do you stand looking into heaven?" To the women they said, "He is not here any longer, he's risen." And to the disciples, right before your very eyes. Their question brings us our focus, quickly from heaven to the realities of earth. We tend to think that Jesus's departure is what should capture our attention, and so we fail to realize that the most astounding event occurs when the disciples take their eyes off of Jesus and begin to look at one another. On the surface, it appears to be a disappointing sight. 11 abandoned disciples, now without a leader, attempting to understand his absence when they crave his presence. But the days and the weeks and the months and the years that follow give testimony to this moment as being when the church began. When the disciples finally look at one another long enough to recognize the presence of Jesus within each one, they suddenly become leaders instead of followers. They become preachers instead of listeners. They become missionaries instead of converts. They become healers instead of those being in need of healing. It's probably not what they had in mind at all. Their preference would have been to hogtie Jesus and keep him fully present for years to come. But when he is taken away, they have to look at one another to see the presence of Christ in the world. It would seem that there are times when Christ has to leave us so that we can figure out how we're going to carry the light into the world. Sometimes we need absence over presence to discover that the power of Easter and resurrection is within us too. Now, I've traveled around the world and I've been in some of the greatest cathedrals ever built. And in those cathedrals, there are stained glass windows where Jesus' birth is faithfully depicted, his resurrection, his crucifixion, and the disciples being chosen, leaving their nets behind in order to go with Jesus. But you have to look really hard to find in some obscure corner of the sanctuary an ascension window. In it we find Jesus hovering over the upturned heads of the disciples. His hands are positioned to extend a blessing, and the faces of the disciples express wonder and awe over what they are witnessing. Those early Christians thought his return was imminent. But now, thousands of years later, when Jesus still hasn't returned, might we design that window differently? Leaving out the angels, leaving out the heavenly light, leaving out the cloud, leaving out Jesus. Instead, there would be just for us disciples. Disciples who remain mystified by the absence. But hungry as we are for God's presence, do we really need reminders of God's absence? Isn't it why we are here anyway? Knowing well God's absence in our prayers and in the dark night of the soul, isn't the purpose of our worship to seek after and bring the presence that appears to be missing? Barbara Brown Taylor helps us at this point. She says, absence is underrated. It is not nothing after all. Rather, it is a heightened awareness, a sharpened appetite, a finer perception. When someone important to me is absent from me, I become clearer than ever what that person means to me. Details that get lost in our togetherness are recalled in our apartness. I see the virtues I have overlooked, the opportunities that I have missed, the quirks that drove me crazy at close range become endearing at a distance. So from that enlarged perspective, I can see that they are the very traits that make my someone someone, and not just anyone. The absent one has a way of becoming present, if not in body, then in mind and spirit. Now, my son Danley and I recently shared an experience involving this sort of absence and presence. In preparation to celebrate his MBA graduation, we had his great-grandfather's pocket watch cleaned and assessed. We wrapped it up with a long letter describing all the admirable attributes of Dr. Clarence Moore Danley. But Dan had a million and one questions about the origins of the watch. The watchmaker had given us an approximate date for its making, and Dan pointed out to me that according to its origination date, the watch is much older than his great-grandfather. Leave it to a mathematician to figure that out. So, with the total void of living historians from the mid-1800s, we pulled out the books and the charts that trace our ancestry all the way to, are you ready for this? Charlemagne. We finally settled on Reverend James Danely as the possible original owner. Now, the minutes from the South Carolina Conference of the United Methodist Church tells us that James Danely, or Uncle Jimmy, was converted at 30 years of age after leading a rough life. He had a peg leg, and I quote, was the most eccentric, yet ablest preacher of his day. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. His manner in the pulpit was peculiar because he had to balance himself. And then he would look deliberately at the congregation, panting for breath. And in a fine, almost squeaking voice, he would announce his text. He was cynical, sarcastic, even snappish. He would have done well here. He lashed the popular vices unsparingly. It was said of him, if he did not edify, he would surely scarify. Sinners gnashed upon him with their teeth, cursed him, and swore, I will never hear him again. And yet they would be the first at his next appointment. We laughed. Oh, I wish you could have heard us when we laughed. And then I became aware the ancestors were delighting in our time as well. Ancestors who had been absent from us for our entire lives were in that room, filling the room as a time wrinkle helped us to experience the blessing of presence rather than absence. Thich Nhat Hanh writes in No Death, No Fear, each time my feet touch the earth, I know my mother is there with me. I know this body is not mine, but a living continuation of my mother and my father and my grandparents, my great-grandparents, of all my ancestors. These feet that I see as my feet are our feet. Together, my mother and I leave footprints in the damp soil. All I have to do is look at the palm of my hand, feel the breeze on my face, or the earth under my feet to remember my mother is always with me, available at all times. Now you may be thinking, whoo, she needs a vacation. I'm not crazy to suggest this to you, because you have also felt wrinkles in time in order to remind you of mysterious presence rather than absence. You first recognize it when you realize there's a lot more to commonplace happenings than meets the eye. You have felt it when visiting favorite places or in sharing memories, when you have awoken with a start from a dream that stings with reality. When you hear a favorite song that puts you back in the arms of a loved one. You know it's happening when your spirit is suddenly and unexpectedly filled with such joy and gratitude for the endless free gifts that life offers that you can almost not contain yourself. You know spirit is at work when words you have never thought or composed come suddenly out of your mouth, leaving you to wonder, where did that wisdom come from? You recognize spirit when the anger you feel suddenly dissipates, and without logical explanation, you throw gracious arms around that person you were ready to tear apart just a few minutes ago. You move with spirit when the music swells and your spirit soars right along with it. You welcome spirit when anxiety and unrest are removed and a deep calm enters your soul. You know presence when your eyes fill with unexpected tears or the beauty of the earth is so amazing that its magnificence hurts your eyes. Time wrinkles when you are praying and you suddenly realize someone is listening, that your spirit is being ministered to, that a peace that passes all understanding has been granted. You recognize the wrinkle when mystery so overcomes you that your breath is hard to catch and you are dying for want of air. When your heart beats sideways for people you never knew or cared about before, and when the thoughts of your brain are suddenly flattened so that amazement has space to fill you with wonder. My friends, the powerful presence of spirit still comes to lend us the necessary courage and creativity to be a light in the darkness. In her book, A Wrinkle in Time, Lingle gives us a visual to help us in our understanding of how our witness makes a difference. She's telling the characters how the darkness can be defeated when she writes, "Suddenly, there is a great burst of light through the darkness, and the light spreads out, and where it touched the darkness disappears. The light spread until the patch of the dark thing has vanished and there's only gentle shining. And through the shining come the stars, clear and pure. Then slowly, the shining dwindles with it and nothing but the stars and starlight remain. No shadows, no fear. Only the stars and the clear darkness of space, quite different from the fearful darkness of the thing." She says, "You see, it can be overcome. It is being overcome all the time. What you saw was a star giving up its life in battle with the darkness. And it won, my children. Oh, yes, it won, but it lost its life in the winning." I read that and think, Jesus, of course, is that star. And because we have witnessed his brilliance, we carry his light within us. That is what Jesus reminds us of when he commissions us to be his witnesses in Jerusalem and in all of Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. We are to carry the light of the world, to be fully present, presence of Christ, while Christ is absent and the Spirit, according to Ephesians 1, gives us wisdom, enlightenment, hope, inheritance, and an immeasurable greatness to get the task done. This is an odd Sunday. To celebrate the Ascension. But it is necessary to keep mystery before us. It keeps reminding us that things a great deal more mystifying than Jesus rising in the air occur in a body of believers on a regular basis, like spoon-feeding the elderly, or agreeing to be a medical proxy for someone without family, or when we willingly co-sign on bank accounts to protect the vulnerable or their relationships that don't end at the grave, but continue on. At the potluck last Sunday night, somebody, I don't know who and you don't have to confess, brought a big bowl of pimento cheese. Now this cheese, I'm telling you, was freshly grated. It wasn't overdone with mayonnaise, and it had just the right sprinkling of pimentos throughout. It was just like I like it. And ordinarily, I would have taken a larger than life-size serving, but something made me hesitate. You see, when I saw that pimento cheese, I was surprised by a little catch in my throat and a tear in my eye as I realized how much I missed Judy Bridgers. Judy brought pimento cheese at every potluck, pimento cheese at every church picnic, pimento cheese at every funeral luncheon. And my memories of that gifted me with a wrinkle in time. Because suddenly in my head, I could see Judy and Bill sitting on their back porch at evening time. I could see Judy driving her convertible with Brooke on the front seat. That was her dog, in case you're wondering. Judy's Monday night dinners, her determined work with Birmingham AIDS Outreach. I felt her absence, but her presence was keenly available. So as I worked my way down the table, all those delectables in front of me, my eye was ever on the prize, that bowl of pimento cheese. So I dipped some up and I put it on my plate. And when I sat down, I sprinkled pepper on the top, just like Judy always did. As I marveled over every bite, Judy was there. She was there in the laughter. She was there in the telling. Judy was there in the listening. Judy was there in the cleaning up. Absence. Presence. Resurrection and ascension. A commissioning. Tell the good news. And the gift of the Spirit who brings courage to do so. It's all in the blessing of a wrinkle in time. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear. Amen.